That working now? So, without Yeshua, without God's love and His Holy Spirit, we can run for a while and we can do a bunch of things. But even lions get tired and hungry, and young men and women grow faint. But in Yeshua, we can keep on going. And so, it's a good thing because that helps us to learn to identify what we're running on. Because when we run out of power, then we must have been starting to draw on something other than the Lord. And I think there's something in everybody that wants to be able to do it themselves. Don't you think? So, it's a good thing that we don't have enough energy and human enthusiasm to just make it all happen ourselves. Because we might end up spending our whole life just doing it in our own power, thinking that it was God's power. So, just be happy you get exhausted, I guess, right? So, anybody want a messianic moment? Yeah. Really, messianic moment, it should be what? What should it be? It should be what? And it probably shouldn't be something that sets messianic Jews apart from the rest of Israel. Or what? Well, or that. And that gets tricky because the body of Messiah isn't, it's not just one thing, but it is one thing. That sounds like a paradox. So, today is Shabbat HaGadol, and I just thought I'd mention a few things about Shabbat HaGadol. Can anybody tell me anything about it?
It's a big Shabbat.
It's a great big Shabbat. Yeah, it was one of the 2 days out of the year when rabbis, well, it was stipulated in their contracts, actually, that they would give a sermon on Shabbat HaGadol and on Shabbat Shuvah. But it wasn't that they weren't allowed to speak at any other time. They could. And there were some times when, like upon the publication of a book being celebrated, sometimes they would speak. I'm thinking it was maybe a book that they wrote. And then, let's see. Says he could speak whenever he deemed appropriate, especially on special calendar dates, such as the annual religious festivals, the special penitential period of the months of Elul and Tishri, and the anniversary of the death of Moses, you know. But he didn't have to, so I don't know. I think maybe the sermons were really long on those days. But this is, you know, going back about 250, 300 years ago. And I guess then things started to change. So it was thought to be, I guess, important that a message be given on Shabbat HaGadol. So let's see. These are occasions where, according to the Talmud, in Megillah 32a, since the days of Moses, the official communal rabbi was supposed to instruct his flock as to the halakhic regulations of these two holidays. There you have it, right out of the Talmud's mouth. So, let's see. Does everyone know what to do to get ready for Passover?
Oh, I forgot to say, we have a sign-up sheet for selling your comments.
Ah, I did. I was wondering about that. We have a sign-up sheet for selling your comments. Do you want to sell your comments, Miriam? By the way, am I the only one that's just thrilled that her name is Miriam and not Mary? What? you and me both, huh? Sorry to put you on the spot, but do you want to sell your comments? Do you know what that's all about? Okay, well, rather than you know, literally throw it all away, which would be leavened things. Now, the definition of what's chametz, according to the rabbis, isn't necessarily as simple as whether or not it's actually something that's leavened. And of course, the Sephardic Jews were a little, I think, smarter in their decisions about some of this stuff, because their diet is less restricted during Pesach than Ashkenazi Jews. But I make my own matzah at least a lot of the time. And in some communities, I mean, that would be like, you couldn't do that. Because the flour, I mean, I don't know, some of you may know that they used to take, I don't have much time, so I should really truncate this. But they used to take over the Tuttletown grist mill, right? Every year, they'd clean the whole thing out, and then there'd be a rabbi or rabbis there watching everything, and they would produce the matzah, I mean the flour for the matzah for Passover. And then, it would be made into matzah for that year's Passover, and I assume most of that matzah was used in the New York City, greater New York City area, but it probably spread. So the flour to make matzah for Passover was especially guarded. So it's what I call more kosher than kosher. That's also what I think glatt kosher means. It's you kosher it, it's kosher, and then you make it more kosher. And I don't know. I mean, once something is clean, do you need to wash it again? But it's really taken seriously. So the flour can't have gotten into contact with any leavening agent. Now, to me, it gets a little funny, and of course, a lot of this stuff started before certain scientific things were as clear as they are now. But 18 minutes was determined to be the amount of time between mixing the dough for the matzah and when it had to get baked, because within 18 minutes, it could start to become leavened. Now, that's pretty fast. I mean, that's fast. I mean, active dry yeast, well, something starts to happen. But the number 18 is significant in Judaism, and so, of course, the reason that it's 18 minutes has to have something to do with the 18 blessings and every play, every place else that 18 comes into play. Yeah, the chai, which the numerical value is 18, and all of that stuff. But I loved Jacob Neusner's response one time. I wrote to him, I emailed him about matzah and making my own matzah for Passover. And I remember him writing back and saying, by all means, make your own matzah. And part of the thing is that, I mean, nobody has to do it the same way, but to me it seems like the more you get involved with Pesach itself directly, the more meaning it has. So when I started making my own matzah and I started making matzah plagues, you know, for the, and some people I do think matzah is the 11th plague, but when I started, you know, I started making things out of matzah for Passover, Pharaoh, Moses, all the plagues and all of that stuff, and then making my own matzah, the thing is, I just felt like it gave me more and more like an entrance into the whole thing, and so I end up thinking about all kinds of things that have to do with Passover and the Passover lamb and the Messiah and everything, and why we're here on earth and really what the Exodus means when I'm doing all of that stuff. Now, you don't have to do all of that stuff in order to have the same kind of experiences. You can have them reading the passages that are relevant, which is probably every passage in the whole Bible. Well, you know how I think. But at any rate, Miriam, people would take everything they own that's leavened, considered leavened, or chametz, and sometimes box it up, put it all in one place where they won't accidentally go and start eating it. And then they sell it to a non-Jewish neighbor. In Jerusalem, the chief rabbi, I don't know if the guy is still living, but for many years, the same Arab guy bought all chametz in maybe the whole land of Israel every year. And then with the understanding that at the end, it has to be a real sale, but it's a legal fiction. But technically, he could decide to just keep it. And then, so the agreement is then, if he's going to keep it, well, then he would actually have to pay for all of it, and that would be a lot of money for all of that stuff. But they would sell it to him, and then for the whole feast, and then afterwards, the rabbi goes and buys it back. And then, only after it's been bought back, can they start eating the leavened things again. And so, if you want to get into it that way, you can... your household can sell your chametz to Barbara Chambers, like the rest of us that are going to do it will, like we've been doing for how many years now? 19 years she's been buying our chametz. By the way, if you have any beer, oh, not that anyone drinks beer here, that's chametz. That's chametz, so you got to put that in with your chametz. I mean, if you're gonna do it, if you're gonna actually do it, it's probably best not to consume chametz while you're observing the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But if you're gonna just eat fluffy bread and only not eat it, you know, just eat matzah at the Seder, I mean, it's up to you. We don't do things under compulsion here. We do things because we find meaning and purpose in them, and a blessing from the Lord for those that enter in. And I think the more you enter in, the more blessing there is, unless you're doing it thinking that you're keeping some bunch of rules by which God will think you're more holy. Then, I don't know. I'm not sure if it ends up having much meaning if that's the kind of motivation. So the point is of Passover, well, I mean, the most obvious thing is slaves were set free. And so for freedom, we've been set free. So if we're going to observe anything, it should be freedom we observe it in, not under oppression. feeling like, oh, I gotta do this. That's not really, that's like celebrating an anniversary with your spouse, feeling like, oh, I'm stuck, have to celebrate our anniversary. Man, I want to just go golfing or fishing, and you know, she could just do what she wants. Why can't we enjoy the day? Something like, you know, that's not the kind of attitude the Lord wants. And I think He actually would rather that you did just go golfing or fishing than try to relate to Him with that kind of an attitude. So I don't know, but maybe that was the messianic moment. And some more. But so let's see. I am thinking about the Torah portion and this mysterious. Lord, I ask You to bless us all here. I thank You that you listen to us sing to You and praise You. You listen to our prayers. You love us. And I just ask You to breathe on us all today and encourage us. You've made us Your people. You've made us Your witnesses. And I just ask that the joy of our salvation would grow in our hearts and our gratitude and amazement at the redemption You've worked for us would grow, that it wouldn't that we wouldn't get used to it, that you would refresh that in us, and that we would awake in the morning with the knowledge that every day of life is a gift, and that we can use it for You and Your glory, relating to You, and that You have supplied all we need. And I ask You for Your help now, Lord, in Yeshua's name. Amen. So I love this this part in this coming through. What? Well, you might be able to hear me, but we would mean everyone can, and I bet there are people that can't hear me as well as you can. Okay, so I was thrilled to find out with respect to this. The leper, you know, the one that has tzaraat, a rash or leprosy or whatever strange thing has happened to his skin. It says, "This shall be the law of the leper in the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought to the priest, and the priest shall go forth out of the camp, and the priest shall look." So he couldn't come into the camp, right? Because if he is cleansed, it's not been proven yet, right? And there are some things to take care of. So the priest has to actually go out there, which is where Yeshua came to meet all of us, which is where the scriptures say, even if we're clean, we have to suffer with him outside the camp. But so the priest goes out to him, and you go out of the camp, and the priest shall look, and behold, if the plague of leprosy be healed in the leper, then shall the priest command to take for him that is to be cleansed, two living clean birds, and cedarwood, and scarlet and hyssop. And so, by the way, who supplied these two birds? Not the one to be cleansed. He didn't bring the birds. What? I suppose maybe the priest saw to it. So this cleansing isn't worked by a sacrifice that the leper brought himself. Isn't that interesting? So with respect to this, these mysterious things, this earthen vessel and the cedar wood and the scarlet and all this, I love this, what Maimonides, or Rambam, as you know him better as. Right, Miriam? Rambam? We're always talking about Rambam, right? I'm sorry, I'm spreading it around a little. I usually just pick on Becky. So this is what Maimonides said about this stuff. I do not know at present the reason for any of these things.
I love that.
I mean, he's the guy that wrote the book and said, hey, you don't need the Torah now, just read my book. Well, that's what Rabbi Joshua Levine Grater says that Maimonides said, at least. So I just love that at present he's just like has no idea. So I'm thinking about this, and I always think of Yom Kippur and the two goats. You know, one of them dies, and one of them is, well, it's supposed to be released. Now, at least during a certain period of time, they actually took that one that they put all the sin on, and somebody would lead it off to a cliff and push it off to make sure that it never came back with all the sin. But it doesn't say to push it off a cliff in the Torah. But that is what they did, at least during a certain period of time. So one of them died, one of them lived. Now, of course, that goat wasn't washed in the blood of the other one. But so in this case, cedar wood. So why do you, what's a cedar wood about, you think? What? Well, it does smell good. I don't know what the cedar of Lebanon smelled like. I don't know if it's anything like the aromatic cedar we have around here. There are different kinds of cedar. There's red cedar, there's white cedar, and there's aromatic cedar, which the core heartwood looks red, but that's not red cedar. There are three different cedars. But the cedars, we know, were very resistant to decay. And so it occurred to me, you know, that it says in Psalm 16:10, and there's reference to it in Acts 13:35, that you know, this one, the Holy One, not knowing any corruption, right? And of course, we know that, and it says that in Acts, we know that when David was buried, that his body decayed. But I'll tell you what I see here. I see that this person needs to be cleansed. So that sounds like everybody that's ever been born to me. And then you have this earthen vessel. Well, by the way, the water, let's see, it might say different things in different translations. But, well, let me finish reading. Then shall the priest command to take for him that is to be cleansed two living clean birds, and cedar wood, and scarlet, and hyssop. And the priest shall command to kill one of the birds in an earthen vessel over running water. The literal translation of running water is living water. It's actually living water. Now, I've imagined this vessel being held over a stream. But I think the water is taken from water that counts and it's put in the vessel. And so then the first bird is, and the priest shall command to kill one of the birds in an earthen vessel over living water. As for the living bird, he shall take it, and the cedar wood, and the scarlet, and the hyssop, and shall dip them and the living bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the running water, or living water. And he shall sprinkle upon him that is to be cleansed from the leprosy 7 times, and shall pronounce him clean. So this is what I'm thinking. Why a piece of wood? I know Maimonides never would have thought what I'm thinking, because he was very keen on never thinking what I'm thinking. But I'm not keen on not thinking that. So I'm thinking cedar wood, highly resistant to decay. What on earth could it mean? I can't prove it, but I actually think it's indicative of Messiah and the fact that he would never know corruption. And by the way, the Paschal lamb, if everything was done right, in any case, the Paschal lamb itself would never know corruption. You realize that? You know why? It either all gets eaten, or if there is any left over, it can't be left till morning, and anything that's not consumed has to be burned up in the fire. So none of the Paschal lamb would ever, ever decay. None of the bones are broken, and none of it would ever decay, because it's either consumed or completely, well, consumed by people or by fire, and nothing's left. It never rots. It's never going to be in a fridge, and somebody finds some of it in the back and goes, "Oh, Mom, look at this. How long has it been?" And she says, "Well, it's Erev Sukkot." That would be 6 months. I don't know what the longest anything like that's been in our fridge. Some of it pretty long. Hopefully not ever 6 months. But, so where were we? So the one bird, I think, represents Yeshua. And I think the water represents the water of immersion. And the living water, which if one drinks, they will never thirst again. And I think it's a picture. To me, it seems a picture of everything about what Yeshua's ministry would accomplish for an individual and for all humanity, which is to cleanse them and bring them back into fellowship with the community of the righteous, who are righteous by faith, not by works. And so the living bird that's released is, I just believe it's representative of the person themselves that is now released, spared from death, spared from being separated from the community, and brought back into full relationship. And he is and the person himself is also sprinkled with the blood of that first bird and the water. With the it would seem that the cedar wood and the scarlet and the hyssop are all dipped together, so when the person's sprinkled, that it's everything that's been dipped in there being waved at them. I don't know exactly. It's hard to be completely certain about some of these questions. But and after the sprinkling, then he lets the living bird into the open field. And so then the process of the person that's been cleansed coming back into the community begins. He can start. He can go back and take care of the rest of the things that he's to do. By the way, Joanne, I just want to say that with reference to your question, I don't remember exactly how you put it, but you brought up whether or not someone becomes a priest. Well, thing is, I think what God had in mind was a kingdom of priests. And so in the consecration of the actual priests, you know, the blood was put on the ear and the thumb of the right hand and the big toe of the right foot, and it has to do with basically with, you know, doing holy things with your hands. You know, it's representative of the whole person being dedicated to and focused on God and doing good deeds in the body rather than ill. So, so I think, in a sense, then, what's happening when this person is brought back in is what's supposed to happen with all the members of the community, is that it really is consecrated. They are to be consecrated, ear, hand, foot, and then mouth, eyes, whole being, into the service of God. So it is analogous to what's done with the priest, but God always wanted all of Israel, and then through Israel, all of mankind, to come into this state. I don't think the priests were actually supposed to be better people than everybody else. Everyone ultimately would be made to measure up to the same standard by the work of Messiah. So where are we? It's 1:30. So just to it says in 1 Corinthians 5, get rid of the old yeast that you may be a new unleavened batch as you really are. So that's Paul speaking to the Corinthians. They weren't the most orderly congregation, by the way. They had some stuff left in the proverbial refrigerator for way too long. It was stinking. But this is what he says to them. Get rid of the old yeast that you may be a new unleavened batch as you really are. So here's what I want to say to you. You really are an unleavened batch. You already are. He's telling them they already are, but he's also telling them to get rid of the old leaven. But he's not saying then finally you'll be that. He's speaking about what Messiah has already done for these. This is a pretty messy congregation there. But the thing is, the work of Messiah has already been done for them. That's not in question. It's just more and more walking out what Messiah has done in actual life. So I think it's an encouragement, because the thing is, when that cleansed leper goes back into the camp, he's not going back in because he did great works. He's going back in because God made provision for him. And yes, whatever the thing was in his actual skin, it cleared up. And there are all kinds of things said about that whole subject. It doesn't matter. The thing is, there are things that separate a person from the community, that separate a person from relationship, and there are things that bring one back in. And ultimately, what brings a person back in is Messiah himself and the work that he does in a person's heart. So if you believe in Messiah, then you are already clean. We don't observe Passover trying to make ourselves into clean people. Messiah has made us clean, and that makes it possible for us to enter in to the feast and celebrate it, not with the old leaven, but with the new. So going on, it says, "For Messiah, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. Therefore, let us keep the feast, not with the old leaven or the old leavened bread, leavened with malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and of truth." So in closing, rather than going into it, I was reading in Luke earlier in the week, and at the point where Yeshua is about to be betrayed. It's kind of interesting, you know, what the disciples were talking about. So this is all going on, and they're arguing about who's the greatest. Right, like right or close to the same time. And then when the notion that one of them is going to betray Yeshua comes up, they're all like, "Oh, could it be me? Wait, I'm the greatest. Maybe I'll betray him." I mean, our thoughts are just all over the place, right? And it's clear that it depends on Yeshua, not on those 12 guys, right? It's really clear. I'm not putting them down. It's just, they were just people, and they were like everybody else. And then there are claims that they're going to die with him. And so what I see in that is that the context is Passover, and it is the ultimate Pesach, where the disciples, particularly Peter, on the basis of his own zeal and human enthusiasm, is never going to leave Yeshua, and he's going to go to the death with him. And Yeshua tells him, no, you're going to betray me, and this is how it's going to happen. But then later, strengthen your brothers. I think it's an indication, really, of you're already unleavened, but take out the old leaven. I'm taking care of that stuff for you, myself. I'll do it. You can't do it. And when it's all over, realize that you are clean. You're not condemned, and strengthen your brothers. It's never on the basis of human enthusiasm. And I think the enemy is always trying to trick us into thinking that somehow we need to just do things this much better and that much harder and be that much more diligent. Yeah, well, we should be diligent, but we shouldn't be diligent in the way that the enemy is trying to tell us we should be. We should be diligent in depending on the work of Messiah, and then because he has done what he has done for us, then we should be able to declare that we can do the things that we should do because he strengthens us to do it. And that includes observing a feast with the new unleavened bread and not the old unleavened bread of malice and sin. And you can all fulfill your calling, and you can observe the whole feast in freedom and joy. And so that's what we're going to do this year. So let us know if you want your chametz sold. And Lord, I just ask you to draw us all close to you, that we would draw near to you as you draw near to us, because that's what you want, that no one would be distant from you, because you're calling us and you draw near to those that draw near. So you moved on our behalf first, Lord. Just encourage us all. Fill us with your love, Lord, and we ask you for opportunity to show the truth of your Son and what he's done for humanity to other people that need to know it during this season of Pesach this year. In Yeshua's name, amen. Vishamru.